SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour three on this Tuesday, and still just so much to absorb from the weekend. And when the Metropolitan Handicap, when it moved from its Memorial Day station for years to this big Belmont Super Weekend, there was some consternation just that it doesn't get as much attention. Well, it got plenty of attention, and it may have been, in a lot of ways, the most exciting race of the day. I mean, the finish between Be Jersey and Mind Your Biscuits was absolutely thrilling. And Be Jersey absolutely announcing himself in a big way. Interestingly, the second year in a row that a Steve Sexton mile winner then transferred to Belmont to win the Met. More spirit last year. Steve Asmussen joins us. His first Met mile win in his Hall of Fame career. Steve, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Pretty great for Mr. Fipke, too. And he could, in fact, sit for, right?
Very impressive by Mr. Fipke, you know, for to him to have another grade one winning homebred. The breeding program that he's put together the last two or three years and the grade one winning horses that he is turning out is quite impressive.
And this, you know, fashioned with Jersey Town, you know, with his own Jersey Town.
And he actually a grade one winner and a grade one winner that he raced also.
Yeah. That Barkley trained. And interestingly, out of a Rahi mare. And I suppose that, you know, that was part of the way he was campaigned early. And Steve, he's 5 for 6 in the U.S. or 4 for 5, whatever it is. Talk a little bit about, you know, once he got into your hands, you know, last fall and
well, I was right place at the right time in Dubai with a gunrunner for the World Cup when Be Jersey ran in the UAE Derby over a year ago, and he had a very rough trip that night, and the decision was made for him to come back to the States then. He had shown plenty of talent, and the decision was made for him to come back to the States, and I was the lucky recipient of him, and he is developed into a Met Mile winner, which sounds really good to me.
You've kept him so far between 7/8 and the mile. So he's done some two-turn miles. And when it came to this, I mean, what challenges did you expect in terms of, I mean, obviously pressure-wise, this was a hot group.
He was, as you mentioned, it's the second year in a row that the Steve Sexton mile winner has won the Met Mile. It was obviously the timing between the two races is ideal. I must admit, I do like Be Jersey better in two-turn races than one turn. Just how smooth is it and how he runs the turn, I think, is just a huge advantage for him in both of the 3 2-turn miles that we've run him in. He was just so uncontested and had things his own way, that it will be interesting to see which way we go with him next.
And that would be the question. There's lots of different kinds of opportunities, knowing that he could also cut back to 7/8, knowing that things would circle back to Churchill for the Dirt Mile Breeders' Cup. I mean, that obviously feels like the long-term goal.
Well, the Met Mile is a Breeders' Cup win-in-year-in race. The Breeders' Cup runs this year at Churchill Downs, and that would be a one-turn mile in very similar circumstances to the Met itself. But he is a very exciting horse. I think that will show the effort that he gave Saturday, the respect that it deserves, and try to map out a second-half campaign for him.
Now, it's certainly notable, too, Steve, what a nice weekend it was for Ricardo Santana Jr. And he continues to, you know, to really come out on big days and is edging his way, you know, to the top of the you know, the really elite jockey community.
Well, we've had a lot of luck together. I obviously entrust Ricardo with some very special horses, and I think that he's making the most of his opportunities, but Ricardo Santana will be heard of and well represented on many a big day in the future.
Absolutely, and he still had a, I saw him Saturday night dinner, and he had he's got kind of a infectious grin when he's smiling. He was sky high, and still, you know, still very much in the moment coming out of Saturday. We should talk, Steve, too, some of the other things that went on, and have to discuss Tenfold, and he was kind of pinballed a little early. Your thoughts about the way the Belmont turned out?
Right. Not the trip that we dreamed of for a classic, but very, very few horses do get exactly what the you know, the winner gets the trip he wants. Everybody else better latch on to an excuse and try again.
What
that'll be very interesting. I love who Tenfold is and who he is physically. He came out of the race 100%, and I'm anxious to see what we can get done with him, but I still have a great amount of faith in him and think that he will be a top older horse, and we're going to protect that and try to just develop him into who we think he's going to end up being.
He feels, stylistically, when you look at him, he looks more like a Travers Gold type than a Haskell type?
I'm concerned about the Saratoga surface with him. You know, he is still a little more leg than strength at this point, and not finished developing. So how he does over the next month, 6 weeks, will determine if we run him in the Saratoga three-year-old races or some of the other opportunities. I just think that what we have in our hands is, you know, risking everything, the top.
Well, fair enough. We'll watch for Tenfold to reemerge for the second half, and obviously the great performance in the Preakness, very solid effort on Saturday, and a player for the second half of the year. The two-year-olds, Steve, are just getting going, and you ran the maiden in the Astoria the other day, and if people didn't see it, Lady Apple, it was a bit of a hard luck loser in there, and she will not be a maiden long.
We ran her in the Astoria saving our conditions in case we didn't have anybody who could win at Saratoga, but I thought she ran very solidly, showed a lot of grit down in very tight on the inside. I thought, you know, I gave her a good trip, but it was very tight nonetheless. And with her being a Curlin, the Miss Mary Apples, I think that she will only get better as races go further and continue to physically develop. So we might have a star on our hands for Phoenix.
Agreed. She was very game in there, and
she's got a tremendous disposition and temperament that I think will only help her get better.
Should also note some of the far-flung weekend action too, Steve. And Lion Knight, I saw, won the Prairie Mile at Prairie Meadows.
Yeah, he rebounded and ran a very good race. We were very disappointed in him on Derby Day on the undercard. We felt that Derby week that he was our sure winner on the card, and he, whether it was simply the mud or the circumstances, he ran a very disappointing race, but it trained nice sense, and feel that the Prairie Mile is a, you know, the natural and a good setup for the Iowa Derby for him.
Excellent. And of course you make a habit of hitting those regional derbies hard. Who speaking of which, who's your West Virginia Derby horse? Because you've always got one.
Well, I think we're very fortunate to have some very solid three-year-olds, and it'll be timing. There's obviously a race or two between now and the West Virginia Derby for the three-year-olds, but they got to continue to be getting better and be doing good at the right time.
Steve, before we look ahead to the weekend, and of course it's Foster Night, and you got the Matt Wynn and the Regret and the Wise Dan. It's really a great, you know, late meet, kind of back half to the, you know, to the Derby session. And before we get there, I happen to see a Winchell, an older horse that must have taken some time to get to the races. Devil's Halo, the other day.
Yes, very, very rare for us to have a four-year-old first-time starter. Nothing real seriously wrong with him in any, just little nick and cranny things that has delayed his start. But, you know, another very talented tap at the Winchell's. He's out of a daughter of Fleet Renee, so a family that could absolutely anything. And he was a nice little secret to have in our back pocket.
Nice. And, you know, we should also touch on one horse that, of course, the spring produced in the winter months, Metol, and you had Still Having Fun that chased him in the Chick Lang. Flatter, his win in Baltimore. We read and mentioned yesterday to everybody about the splint issue. How long do you think he'll be out before you can get him back in training?
It'll just depend on the splint and him. You know, he's a very strong horse, carries plenty of weight and stuff. So we'll bring him back, give him all the time that is necessary, and bring him back slowly so that he can be around a while, because there is no replacement for how fast he is.
No, keep an eye out, and we're keeping an eye out for the entries tomorrow. And in fact, when it comes to the Foster, looking at Lee out of the big, you know, that ended up being a Derby weekend success. Looking at Lee's terrific performance, you had him get involved in the race earlier, and it resulted in a big win, and puts him in position, you know, to maybe capitalize on Saturday night.
Well, his performances at Churchill have been his best, and we feel that he deserves this opportunity. Obviously, the Foster being a grade one from a two other than is quite the jump, but I assure you there won't be anybody in the paddock that is scaring looking at Lee.
I love it. Is undrafted, not undrafted, untrapped under consideration?
No, he's not going to run in the Stephen Foster. Looking at Lee, yes.
All right, just one. And how about Tap Daddy? You know, won the off the turf race. Is he running this weekend?
That Tap Daddy gives you so many options because of how versatile he is on surfaces. So in the back of my head, he's a better turf horse than he is dirt horse. But when you're tapping out of a Scat Daddy mare, I don't think you need to worry about surface as much. Just kind of timing. We've had a little wet weather this week in Louisville for him, but he is under consideration for either the American Derby at Arlington or the Ohio Derby, possibly.
Very cool. And then the the Matt Wynn, you know, we were talking 3-year-olds, and Matt Wynn on Saturday as well. And I think, is Combatant headed there?
Combatant is our lone entry in the Matt Wynn, which is going to be a very fast race. Very good field assembled for 100, but I think that measuring where we're at right now and going forward for the second half of the year with a good 3-year-old is very important right now.
Well, and you've had just tons of success year after year with that second half, the 3-year-olds, and obviously, Steve, a big end to the Triple Crown season, and we head to the summer months. Ellis Park, the 2-year-olds will be coming, and the string at Saratoga, and all the other bases from which you operate. Congratulations on a nice addition to your resume, the Metropolitan Handicap and B Jersey. Really comes out of the weekend as one of the top handicap division stars.
Thank you very much.
Always fun to go through the Asmussen barn, check in with Steve, and good chance that he'll be back next week because he's coming in with some hot properties this weekend at Churchill. Let's take a break. We'll come back and have, if everything works properly, we'll get Bob Baffert to talk about what transpired Saturday and what it means to him and what lies ahead and all the things that Justify has brought to the season and the run through the Triple Crown. One more opportunity for everybody at Churchill on Saturday night. I did. It's funny. I talked to Kevin Flannery at Belmont, and I said, you know, I don't know how much parading they'll do. This is not the same kind of horse that night. With American Pharoah, he was out for an hour and 20 minutes. It was unbelievable. This is a little different. I don't know if this horse. Although, you know, Sunday morning by the Terra Nova barn, he certainly was quite proud of himself, posing for pictures, and he was flicking his ears, and he would hear the camera whirl, the sound of the shutters, and he would turn his head, he put his ears up. He I don't know if he's as big a ham, but he certainly knows he's being looked at. That's for sure. Let's take a break. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live it like a good boy ought to. And your mama takes a shine to put their son. Something different, all the girls are seem to like you. Cause you're handsome, like to talk.
Back at the races. And Casey Efferding, Bob Baffert, and, you know, that group out of the Met, Mind Your Biscuits, they were in B Jersey, they were five plus out from Limousine Liberal. I mentioned yesterday, Discreet Lover at 80-1. Manny Franco rode him from fourth like it was the Derby. I mean, that was unbelievable to get up for fourth. That was amazing. Ransom the Moon. Yeah, Ransom the Moon got. You know what? I'm gonna have to go back and watch that again because he never really. He kind of made some late progress, but it really wasn't the trip that you normally see from him. And he looked good. So the, there we go. The other disappointments in there, obviously, you know, McCracken had some backers, and Good Samaritan too. I mean, I like Good Samaritan, and he was well back early, as was Awesome Slew, and it's not like they didn't. You know, it's funny they only went, and now I didn't notice it until now. They 23 flat for that opening. Quarter, and that, I guess that was just enough. They went 45 for the half, and 109-1. They finished fast, 133. And a 109 buyer for B Jersey and Mind Your Biscuits. But that opening quarter may have been just enough to soften it for the late runners. I mean, the discreet lover was the furthest back. And mind your biscuits, you know, to Rosario's credit, and given that he was on the rail, that was a heady ride by Rosario. And because there, you know, there has been occasion when Biscuits has gotten beat in spots where he kind of fit, and you know, certainly Breeders' Cup, you go back to Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, and I know that Chet Summers was a little frustrated that day that he was as far back as he was, and left him with just a little too much to do. So it does feel now at the age of five that Mind Your Biscuits is that much more, you know, tactical. I mean, he was within striking distance, and he got really a good ride by Rosario, and it just B Jersey just would not, just couldn't turn him away. Or couldn't get past, and B Jersey holds him at bay. I don't know. Should we take a vote? What was the? I mean, there were so many good finishes on the day. I mean, still having Funds Rally. I'll put that up there just because it was a score. Spring Quality's win, and you know, there were moments. There were moments in the Woodford Manhattan that anybody could have won. I mean, it when they were what the 16th out, there's 7, 8, 9 horses looked like you had a shot with. Turns out there were really no bad bets in here in the Manhattan, and if you were able to connect, and you know, I know I got a request. That Derby Trail about talking about the decision making. We'll do that with maybe, well, certainly when we talk to Nick on Friday. But I was thinking of getting a visit in with a follow up with Paul Matisse about, you know, some of those decisions. And you know, here was a case with Spring Quality where I just, like I told. I told Graham yesterday that you know, I would have absolutely have used, I don't know if I would have picked him on top Spring Quality, but because I had a you know, I was trying to get, not that there was anything wrong with the price, was he 12-1 morning line? I think he was 12-1, right, going in. Yeah, he's 12-1, but that just that 13 post, it just felt like, and you know, that it was going to be a little daunting, and so I'm just glad I used him. I mean, the way I did, and you got an amazing ride from Edgar Prado. It also should be noted that High Happy, you know, who a lot of people seem to want to line up against, High Happy ran very well and picked up another grade one placement here and, you know, held for third. Look at the chart. Neck, Spring Quality, a neck, Saddler's Joy, neck, High Happy, neck, Manitoulin, neck. And, you know, there are some people that are being critical of Mike Smith when it comes to Manitoulin, that he kept him wide, and was he trying to get around there, you know, unfettered. He got beat three heads, three bobs. This is the definition, as Alan Jerkin said, turf racing. One horse wins and six should have. In this case, you could say eight could have. Unbelievable. Fashion Business ended up in fifth in here, very quietly and unbeknownst, I think, to people. Robert Bruce had the tough luck. You can't fault Gaffleone for saving every step of ground, but then when he needed to, when he was trying to find a way to get extracted and make his run, it just materialized too late. And then when it did, boy, he really came. And we discussed that yesterday with Graham too, because of course the two of them were 1-2 in the Fort Marcy. So ground saving is great. The way Edgar did it, and of course Edgar had that option from the 13 to go ahead. And you heard Graham yesterday say that they didn't want to try to attend the pace from that post. But this all gets back to Rick Hammerly's longstanding advice not to let outside posts dissuade you from betting horses, and that if you think the horse has got the talent, okay, yeah, there may have to pull a rabbit out of the hat, but don't abandon ship. If that is what's holding you back, don't let it. And Hammer's been proven right many, many times on that. Bob Baffert apologized to Casey and us. He cannot join us, so we will bring Jeremy Plonk in, and it is a night school session tonight, we should note, and lots of post-Belmont conversation, but it was countdown to the crown, Jeremy, starting back early on in January, and a crown is exactly what we counted down to. Good morning.
Good morning. I apologize to the viewers who are tremendously let down right now that I'm replacing Bob Baffert. What a performance by him, his horse, his rider, the plan to, you know, get this horse to the Derby was a daunting task. To get to and through the Derby and then the rest of the Triple Crown, really, you know, I beg to think that a lot of Bob Baffert's success over the years has been taken a little bit for granted, because he kind of went on the national spotlight from newcomer to main man very quickly, right? I mean, 1996 was the first time we saw him in the Triple Crown Series. He just got beat a nose by Grindstone. By 97 and 98, he was already a two-time Derby winner, and he was in that pantheon with Baffert, Lucas, and Zito of the 1990s already, you know? And so I think a lot of his training accomplishments may kind of been taken for granted, because I was trying to think back, how many times in his career have you heard somebody say that was a great training job by Baffert? You don't hear it that often. And, you know, maybe Midnight Luke coming back for the second Breeders' Cup, you know? But this truly was a race against the clock. And one of my sayings in racing is you can't beat the calendar. In this case, maybe you don't beat the calendar, but he sure equaled it. And this was an unbelievable task. And, you know, in terms of training jobs, it's the reverse of DeHaas and Michael Dickinson, you know, but it's that mind-boggling that was able to be pulled off as DeHaas, just in a reverse in terms of timing. This was truly a phenomenal feat in today's era. You know, I mean, I'm sure the old-school people laugh and say, yeah, big deal, you know, that this horse ran six times in 11 weeks and blah, blah, blah. But in today's era, this is really a phenomenal accomplishment.
And that is the same tone, Jeremy, that I struck to, is that, and Jay Pribman earlier today as well, that those that, and I basically echoed this or struck this kind of theme regularly the last 5 weeks, that we were seeing something unusual, and that, as a couple of people have suggested, including Baffert himself, may not see again, that this was just a special horse under special circumstances, and it fell into place. Because we say, you know, the Johnny Deism to end all all Johnny Deisms, which is any hiccup, any problem along the way, and the jig is up.
Yeah. I thought you were going to break some eggs and make some omelets or something. but no, I know what you're saying. You can't, I mean, you talk about all the Derby winners, and we're just talking about the Derby at this point. You know, to win the Derby, they just don't have a feather in their cap along the way. And you've heard this from a Carl Nasker to a Doug O'Neill to a Chip Woolley, you know? I mean, things have to all go right to win the Derby. And man, did they just all come together for this horse. You know, no one of his performances was singularly a masterpiece. And so maybe that makes you go, there was no Secretariat 31-length win. There was no Smarty Jones Preakness. It wasn't Barbaro's dominance of the Kentucky Derby. You know, it was a 204 Kentucky Derby. It was slow, blame the track, whatever. Preakness was a 97 buyer. If you believe in the numbers, you go, ah. You know, the Belmont wasn't one of the top 40 fastest Belmonts ever run, and yet it's a Triple Crown winner. So there was no singular awesome jaw-dropping performance. I think with him, it's the collectiveness of what he was able to put together and the time frame that makes him so special. I think that's the whole key, is the time frame, because each race individually on its own, you say, okay, well, he was lone speed in the Santa Anita Derby, and both the world didn't go after him. So he had an easy trip there. You know, you can look at, like, every one of his performances and say, that wasn't the one that I'm going to remember for all time. But, man, when you put those six together and in that time frame of it, I think that's what he's going to be remembered for, is, you know, how he put it all together. This is kind of like a... You know how the Cleveland Cavaliers, like, traded half their team in midseason, right? You know, let's say they traded half their team and put it all together at the trade deadline at the last minute and then went on and won the NBA Finals and swept Golden State. You'd be saying that was one of the great general manager moves of all time. How did that team, a great coaching job of all time, how would Tyronn Lue put an entire team together who never played together in that short amount of time and then go sweep Golden State? The opposite happened, because it's not easy to do that. And what these guys, what Justify was able to do is what the Cleveland Cavaliers wasn't, even with LeBron James' talent. It's, you just can't put it all together that fast and have all the pieces work out. And in this case, Bob Baffert was able to pull it off. And it was, you know, it really is one of the great resume accomplishments of a horse. And, you know, you say, do we judge a horse by, like, how great we think they are and how they would match up with the all-time greats, or do we grade them on their resume, you know? And in terms of resume and the condensed nature of this horse's resume, it's unlike any other, which makes it historically unique. And for that, I think, is the measure of the greatness.
Well, and the best part of this is that despite speculation, people that you know, oh, he'll never race again. The same stuff we heard from post-American Pharaoh. Oh, never race. Oh, forget it. Looks like he's racing. And
the difference here might be, too, is in the ownership. You know, I mean, Zayats, yes, they breed horses, but they're a racing entity, and they want to go around, you know, they wanted to go around the country and put American Pharoah back out there and live the dream more and continue the dream through the Triple Crown, you know, as an individual family ownership. This is a lot more complicated with a lot more folks involved and a lot more breeders involved. So if the statement now is we want to run, but anything at all from a fever to, you know, a foot bruise like he had stepping out of the stall after the Kentucky Derby, that could be enough to end it. And the discussion of saying, look, we're not going to run again. If they pull the plug on him and don't run again, it would not be a business and financial surprise. And I don't think you're a naysayer by saying that. I just think that's the realistic nature of it and the difference in the ownership group here. You know, this isn't Bob and Beverly Lewis. This isn't Zayat, the family and the son and the daughter and the wife and Mr. Zayat. You know, it's a little different. You know, it's a little different in the ownership group. In fact, we don't even know who all the owners are, right? I mean, half the owners are unidentified Chinese billionaires. So it is a little bit different in that respect. I sure hope he runs again, and you know, we'll take Elliot and the folks who are saying that they want to run again, obviously, at their word, because I think they do want to run again. But it wouldn't take much to say that's the last time we saw the horse run. I think it's Smarty Jones, right? The bone bruising, that sort of thing like that. That they were planning on running Smarty Jones, too, and sharing him with the world. And you know, that was the Chapmans. And, you know, and he never ran again either. So he could run again. He may not. I don't think you're being completely a negative Nelly if you think he'll never run again. But at the same time, let's see him again. You know, let's go to the Haskell. Let's go to the Breeders' Cup. Let's see it run out through the end of the season. It'll be fun to see. He's perfect, though, and perfection is awesome. You know, I mean, as great as Zenyatta was to lose the last race of her career, that does change the narrative just a little bit. You know, she's not the greatest undefeated champion who ever raced on the racetrack. She's one of the greatest mares who ever raced all time now. And so that does make a difference. An undefeated career record is something for history and is something to remember, even if it's a short number of races like five or six.
I'm never a stickler on that part of it. I mean, I don't.
But we still talk about the 72 Dolphins, and they probably are about the 30th best team in NFL history. I mean, they're good, there was something about them, you know. But you know, half the guys on the 72 Dolphins couldn't have played for the Steelers probably 5 years later when Hall of Famers up and down the line were winning Super Bowls in the late 70s. So there is something about an undefeated cachet. I mean, I think it matters on the tote board to bettors. You know, an undefeated horse who's 3-for-3 in his career, it draws people's attention. There's something to it. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't, you know, Zenyatta's career was no different getting beat, you know, the neck or whatever it was to blame in the stretch of the Breeders' Cup Classic. But there is something to being undefeated, I think.
Well, beyond that part of it and what lies ahead, some of the other portions, the wagering elements, Jeremy, and some of the horses that ended up distinguishing themselves when we get ready to consider them in the second half of the year?
Well, Gronkowski is the first one that obviously stands out because he ran so well in the Belmont without the expectations to do so. You know, I gave him... He was my first toss out in the race. I just, you know, a miler running on the synthetic overseas. I will say after watching him work with Engaged on XBTV.com and watching his works and seeing him a little bit closer, you know, with the zoom-ins and things like that, you know, built much more like an American horse, as I commented, and, you know, more stout. He wasn't built like that European thin greyhound that we're used to seeing come over here. It kind of looks, everyone looks like a turf miler. He looked like an American racehorse, and he was working head-to-head with a pretty good American racehorse and outworking him. And I thought he was going the easier of the two in his work. So, but those are, you know, 5-furlong moves. Did you think Gronkowski could run a mile and a half, you know, based on all those races at a mile or less on the synthetic? It just seemed like an incredibly tall task. And so he runs a really good second, and that, you know, that opens the door for a lot of optimism the second half of the year because, you know, Chad Brown had barely gotten to know him, you know, and the horse had to overcome a little bit of a fever before the Derby that cost him that race. You know, you get him in Chad's care for another 2 months and then see what he's got in the Travers and towards the Breeders' Cup. You know, he looks like a horse for the Jockey Club Gold Cup in the fall already, you know, back at Belmont, a mile and a quarter. You know, you can almost see his schedule of Travers, Jockey Club, Gold Cup, and see what you've got for the Breeders' Cup. So I think he's obviously a second-half kind of horse because underestimated him, but there was nothing for you to estimate, I think, based on what you saw on form going into that race. He was a complete unknown, and if you had no other good options, you didn't like anybody else in the race, maybe you stumbled into him, but there wasn't enough there to love and embrace to me going into it. Coming out of it, he's probably, you know, the most exciting other horse in the Belmont Stakes this year. You know, we saw a good Magic run so well in the Derby. I thought he ran a good Preakness, pressing the pace. The second half of the year for Good Magic's going to be a big one. But for him, he looks like about a mile and an eighth kind of horse. So Haskell Pennsylvania Derby, that looks like what you're talking about for Good Magic. And those are great races, but, you know, to the mile and a quarter, will Chad even look at him towards the Travers and the Breeders' Cup Classic and races like that? That'll still to be determined. And who knows with Audible? You know, the story we were given with Audible, he's hurt, he's not hurt, they're just not going to run, he'll be right back, he's coming back to the barn. I have no idea where he stands and have no inside information on that, but I know he's an awfully good racehorse, and he's the kind of horse who can have a good second half of the season as well. So this is a good crop. Look, going into the Derby, we thought this was a really good crop. Maybe when you get to the Belmont, you say, oh, it was justifying a bunch of tomato cans. Maybe, but that's probably because the 2, 3, 4, 5 finishers in the Kentucky Derby did not come back through the Belmont Stakes, you know? It was Justify and the others from deeper in the Derby and the newcomers to the trail and those who jumped in at the Preakness. But with the 2, 3, 4, 5 finishers all from the Kentucky Derby not coming back in the Belmont, it certainly did set the table for Justify to, you know, flex his muscle as clearly the best in this three-year-old crop, and he did that. You know, the margins weren't huge, like we talked about. You know, what, 2.5 in the Derby, about 2 in the Belmont, the half length in the Preakness. You know, he didn't blow anybody out, but he didn't look completely in danger in a lot of spots. The one fun point, and this is one of the reasons I took a little bit of a stand against Justify just as a gambler, is that, let's say Bravazo pulls the touch gold in the Preakness, and he's not necessarily the best horse, but he was far enough outside of him, the fog, everything. Mike Smith didn't see him coming. Bravazo nips him on the wire instead of getting beat by a half length. Justify blows him off in the gallop out, and everybody says, well, he was the best horse, he just didn't see him coming. If he'd have got beat in those in the Preakness, he wouldn't even run in the Belmont, I don't think. You know, Baffert, without a Triple Crown on the line, isn't apt to run a ton of horses in the Belmont anyway. So Justify, with all those races crammed into that short amount of time, it would have been easy at that point to just say, we're not going on to the Belmont. We're going to give him a little time and make him a Travers and Breeders' Cup horse later in the year. The reason they go on is because they held on, and Bravazo didn't catch him. So how would history have been different in that respect? I don't even think Justify would have run in the Belmont Stakes had Bravazo completely snuck up on him. But he didn't, and he went on, and he proved to be the best in the Belmont. But that just goes to show the margin between immortality, where he has now, and just being like Nyquist, you know? Win the Derby, lose the Preakness, and then don't run in the Belmont, you know? I mean, he goes from Seattle Slough to Nyquist if that half-length in the fog turns out the other direction. And that's, you know, That's the beauty of how hard this darn thing is and why it's only been done 13 times.
That's well put. It really is. And that's a great context. And I don't want anybody to say, oh, I love Nyquist. Why? It's not an insult. It's not.
No, you know, it's just a comparative resume. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He has the same resume. Well, he doesn't even have as good a resume as Nyquist, because Nyquist was a two-year-old champion. And
exactly.
And then won the Derby, lost the Preakness, and didn't run in the Belmont. So he actually, from a historical context, he goes from Seattle Slough to less than Nyquist. If the Preakness just turned out, and what's the half length? We're talking 4 feet. 4 feet are the difference between Seattle Slough and Nyquist in a resume, and that is not to deter anything that the horse did on the racetrack. It just goes to show how tough it is to be perfect and how tough it is to win that Triple Crown series. The margin between the greats and the ones who just didn't quite get there is, you know, it's paper thin.
Agreed. And then, and as we mentioned, this whole period, especially when it became pretty apparent quickly that we were going to see a Triple Crown try. I mean, I think after the Derby, we knew right away that in all likelihood, this horse was going to get a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. He felt that way, you know. And then they had the deal with the Brutes. What if that foot really was a problem, you know? And what if it would have been a Grindstone situation? How close was he to becoming Grindstone? You know, a Derby winner who's just injured and doesn't even make it to the Preakness. You know, we don't know for sure, you know, how touch and go that may have been for 12, 24 hours during that time. But I'm sure Bob Baffert did not sleep well for those, you know, for that first night of worry afterwards. So we want to say everything follows right along a rise and a fall, and we see these natural progressions, and good horses are supposed to look just like this and develop this way and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But any of these bumps along the way, it's the same thing with, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Johnny Theism. You know, anything that, any hiccup is an issue, and from a historical standpoint, it's just so easy to be derailed from greatness. I mean, it's very easy. You know? And then you get the flip side horse. You get Opportunity earlier on the card for Bob Baffert. And what Baffert's done over the last 2 Belmont days is approaching Woody Stevens-esque, winning 5 straight Belmonts, to go, 7 for 7 on the last 2 Belmont cards is incredible. But to see a horse like Opportunity get to $4.6 million in earnings without hitting the exacta in the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Pegasus World Cup, or the Dubai World Cup. So he doesn't have them with, like, these huge purse races where he's picked up, you know, he got $4 million of his, three of his $4 million in one or two of the races. For a horse like Opportunity to have a $4.6 million resume, and where that puts him among, like, active horses and horses of the last 10 years, nobody ranks him in that pantheon of those horses. But he's got the resume. He's got the money. And he did it the hard way. He didn't do it with, like I said, a bunch of, you know, like Arrowgate, you know, wins two or three big races, right, and then supplants Curlin. Opportunity did the hard way, has a very legitimate old-school resume about him, yet no one respects him as one of the top 10 horses of the last decade. Nobody. But his resume, when you look at the money and everything he's done it, and the hard way that he's done it, and so that's Baffert doing it two different ways, doing it blue-collar and then doing it with white comments, and certainly justify the fastest ascension we've ever seen. I mean, we thought Arrowgate was a fast ascension. He made Arrogate look like sands in the hourglass in terms of how fast he became a household name.
And I had done, I don't know if I read these off yesterday or not. I might have been saving them when we get a chance to talk to Bob. But the graded stake wins, the Rebel, the Clark, the San Pascal, San Antonio twice, Jockey Club Gold Cup, Tokyo City, and the Brooklyn. So two grade one wins. In grade ones, he's... participated 15 times, two wins, 4 seconds, 3/3, 5/4. And, I mean, he's a horse that has performed better away from Florida than Florida, from California than in California. Jeremy, just about 15, 20 seconds, but tonight, night school.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up the Belmont. We're going to talk about the controversy, the way the race was run. We're going to talk about what handicapping lessons we pulled out of it. Bob Neumeier, Brian W. Spencer, Caton Bradard, myself, you'll be joining for your segment as well. And hopefully the fans join us. 8:30 Eastern, live premiere for our second Tuesday of the month, the June Night School coming up tonight.
Jeremy Blanc, everybody, horseplayernow.com. And Night School tonight, 8:30. Going to tape a segment with Brian Spencer later this afternoon. Brad Cox, of course, appreciate Brad and Louis Carvajal joining us. Steve Asmussen as well. Jay Pridman and Jeremy. We'll catch up with Bob at some point this week. And plenty more. Andy Serling tomorrow and Sid Fernando among the visits. And I think we're in the process of planning a whirlwind Thursday, Friday for you as well. Racing, it is Tuesday, right? So what do we got? We got Finger Lakes and we got Delaware. We got Indiana later, of course. Parks, Presque Isle, Thistledown, Fort Erie, Louisiana Downs, Fairmont. Good luck on your plane, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 tomorrow morning here, Sirius XM. Thanks for joining me. Talk to you tomorrow.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
This is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a two-year-old calibred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.